It's time for Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life with your host, Alan Gervie. Alan is the managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervie & Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm which has represented injured workers for over 35 years. And now, here's your host, Alan Gervie.
Wow, I have not heard that intro for so long. Actually, it's my second week back. It's been a long hiatus for Gervie's Law. I am Alan Gervie. And yeah, I have redefined prolonged hiatus as we're back. Last week, we had a great show with Alan Dershowitz. And today, we have an equally great show, I am anticipating, with our guests. It's so nice to be back here at KBC. Nothing has changed. Been doing this show for 10 years and took a little time off, as you heard about last week. And here I am. I'm back. And I have a new guest today. He's not really new because he's been on my show a few times in the past 10 years. And I'll tell you, in the past, when John Eastman was on the show, things were simple. Back in the day, he was, maybe a little controversial. I remember him debating liberal Erwin Chemerinsky, having a great debate with him. But they were just basically talking about different perspectives. Now everything has changed, and we're going to hear about that. Since the election of 2020, John Eastman, who is a lawyer, a legal scholar, former clerk to Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, former candidate for California Attorney General, former dean of the Chapman University School of Law, and here he is in a little bit of hot water, and we need to figure out how John can get out of this hot water. John, welcome back to Gervie's Law. It's been a while.
Thanks very much for having me back on, Alan, and welcome back from your own hiatus.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I really like to hear your voice because you always have this kind of positive little intonation in your voice, even though things have been a little bit difficult since we last talked. And we're going to talk a little bit about your situation. I hope you don't mind because I know you want to get it out there. You want to represent yourself. You're a strong advocate. So let's talk about what happened after the election. You were promoting a legal strategy to keep former President Donald Trump in power. You were accused of making efforts to overturn the 2020 election. And you tried to persuade Vice President Pence to block the presidential transfer to Joe Biden. And you were doing that from a legal basis, from your perspective, but a lot of people didn't agree with that. How do you look at it now when you look back 4 years?
Well, let me correct a few things, because what you've just given is a fairly left-leaning talking points narrative. I didn't try and overturn the election or keep Trump in power. What we sought to do was conduct investigations of the acknowledged illegality that occurred in the conduct of the election to see if that illegality affected more votes than the margins of error. And it very likely did in Georgia, in Arizona, in Wisconsin, and in Pennsylvania, and probably in Michigan as well. And we had state legislators who were saying their elections were conducted illegally and unconstitutionally, and they were asking the vice president to give them an extra week or 10 days once they were back in session to assess the impact of that illegality. And my famous memo actually says, and if the margin, if the impact was less than the margin, they recertify Biden and Biden wins. That was one of the scenarios spelled out in my memo. So it really was all along an effort to get to the bottom of what went on and try and ensure that the actual will of the voters, once illegal votes are discarded, was given effect, however that would have bounced.
Okay, now you're talking about the article that you wrote back in 2021, Setting the Record Straight on the POTUS, and in that article you mention everything you're talking about, looking at it from a legal perspective, yet other people, and I don't mind you saying liberal leaning, whatever it is, we're just trying to get to the truth here so you can talk conservative, liberal, it doesn't matter. Other people saw it as something that was subversive, something that was not on the up and up, that was trying to steal power away from President Biden. Now, last week, Alan Dershowitz and former FBI agent Rick Kuiper talked about the Keith Raniere case, and they talked about how the FBI had fabricated evidence and manipulated the evidence. Can you draw parallels in your situation where, from your perspective, you were just trying to get to the bottom of the investigations, trying to make sure that everything was done properly, yet somehow, isn't there a hint that there may have been some manipulations or fabrications here as well?
Well, I'll give you one example of fabrication in my California bar trial. One of the key issues in my advice was that the Electoral Count Act of 1887 was unconstitutional because it grabbed for Congress power that the Constitution assigned elsewhere to the vice president and to the state legislatures. And so they put into evidence a document that said the court in the District of Columbia had already ruled the Electoral Count Act to be constitutional. The quotation they pull is doctored. That case had nothing to do with the Electoral Count Act.
How do they doctor it, John? How do they doctor it? They just erase it?
They put in brackets Electoral Count Act instead of the language of the opinion, which said these statutes that they're referring to were immediately above, and they were state statutes delegating certification authority to the governors. It had nothing to do with the Electoral Count Act. So they simply cited a memo that doctored that quotation from the court and put that into evidence in my case. This is the kind of thing we were dealing with throughout the 10-week most expensive and longest bar disciplinary proceeding in history.
How are you not able to show that doctoring when you're talking about something so important as the constitutionality?
Well, we put it in. They filed a notice of errata. They even claimed that the wrong court had claimed that, you know, the Electoral Count Act was constitutional. So they fixed that error in a notice of errata, but they didn't touch the fact that they had used a doctored quotation. So we filed a response saying this quotation is doctored. It's not what the opinion says at all. And unfortunately, they treated the doctored quotation in the opinion uncritically as if it was true. So this will certainly be one of the many issues that we take up on appeal. But this kind of thing, you know, particularly when I'm being accused of making false statements by people that are making blatantly false statements in the claims against me. Another example, you know, on my speech on the mall on January 6th, I said dead people voted. That's one of the charges against me, that was false. And then what they say in the same paragraph where they claim that was false is that the Michigan Inspector General had determined that only 1,500 dead people voted. In other words, in the very same paragraph they claim that I was lying, they acknowledge that what I said was true.
So if you take your words verbatim, you were not lying, because all you would need would be not zero, the one dead person, and that is a true statement. Now, it begs the question, though, are we just looking at this minutiae and the big picture? When you look at the big picture, it would have no changes, nothing to do with the election or any other substantive changes to the government.
Well, the big picture is the illegality that was done in the 2020 election, getting rid of bipartisan teams going into nursing homes in Wisconsin, illegal, using drop boxes and human drop boxes in Wisconsin, subsequently held to be illegal, altering the deadline for returning ballots in Pennsylvania, illegal, running what I call porta potty precincts in Atlanta, illegal.
Right. But John, I just want to ask you, I understand that. And those are great points, because you're looking at the big picture. We need change in this country so that we can get an effective election and something that's accurate. But it still leaves the question unanswered. Would it have changed the result if all of what you're talking about was done properly and we didn't have dead people voting and porta potties voting and everything else?
The evidence that I had at the time strongly suggested it would. The evidence that's come in subsequently has confirmed that view. In Georgia and Wisconsin, most clearly, in Arizona and Pennsylvania, look, even to this day in Pennsylvania, there are 120,000 more ballots that were recorded than people recorded having cast ballots. and the margin in Pennsylvania was 80,000. So in each of those swing states, the illegality affected more votes than the margin of victory. So, yes, I do believe it affected the outcome of the election, not only in those states, but overall, because those states together are more than the Electoral College majority.
Okay, so moving on to your personal situation, because that may be true or it may not be true, but obviously we can't change history. President Biden has been in power since the election, and there is no going back, even if you're correct. Let's talk about you and how this has impacted your career as a lawyer. We just had Judge Yvette Rowland, who's overseeing the state bar proceedings in California, issue a 128-page ruling to suspend your license. You are appealing that. It'll go to the Supreme Court. And your basis for the appeal is that you've already lost approximately $1 million. You'll lose more money. You can't represent people like Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Taylor Greene who want you to represent them. How is this appeal going to move forward, and what is your prediction of the outcome?
Well, the comments about the finances and also the current clients wanting me to continue to represent them were simply a motion to stay the interim suspension pending the appeal. The state bar court has no authority to actually suspend or disbar an attorney, but they can recommend disbarment. And once that happens, the attorney gets placed on what's called involuntary inactive enrollment status, which is similar to a suspension, but not a formal suspension. And so we said, put that on hold while we appeal. The appeal itself will be filed later this month. And it will challenge several things. It will challenge her erroneous interpretation of the protections afforded by the First Amendment, because Right. Some of the charges against me, they claim that I made false statements in public speeches and in radio interviews and in articles I published. This is quintessential protected speech under the First Amendment. And so we will be challenging that. But we will also be challenging the very skewed look at we put on a lot of evidence that credibly supported the claims I was making at the time. Whether those were right or wrong, the fact that they were plausible claims, and I believe they were right, is something that means you should not be disbarred for it. This is what lawyers are supposed to do in zealously advocating for their client.
Regardless of who the client is.
Exactly. Particularly if the client is unpopular among certain circles.
Right.
Because they're the ones that test the limits of our devotion to the rule of law.
So why, John, I have to ask you, why is it then when you look at the media on this issue, on you, all they want to talk about is the fact that you apparently claim that you're losing money, you don't have an ability to represent your clients, and they need your representation, they can't have anyone else. Why is that what the media is focusing on when you're telling me that there are issues of due process that really should prevail in this situation?
Well, just by the procedural posture, we had to file a motion for stay, and those were the things that were relevant for the motion to stay. The actual appeal will come later, and it's these other things that will be taken up on appeal. So they're jumping all over because they think it makes a nice hot news story. But that's rather dishonest. If you want to look at the reporter that actually covered the trial very, very thoroughly, day to day, wall to wall for the whole 10 weeks, her name is Rachel Alexander. She's a reporter with the Arizona Sun-Times, and she published articles two or three a week, but also a Twitter feed with running commentary on what was going on in the trial. I've linked to some of her articles at my legal defense fund site, givesendgo.com/Eastman, so people can easily find them if they want to know what actually occurred. And I think it's important because, the notion that lawyers, in giving advice that has plausible grounds for it, or making factual allegations that have plausible support for them, this is what we do in the courts across this country, as you know full well, every day. But during my bar trial, they actually said, well, your expert, his report was rebutted by the other side's expert. Why didn't you withdraw the case? I said, well, it was a counter expert. Tell me what case you've ever seen that didn't have experts on both sides.
Right, saying different things.
Yeah, and so this is what, we were dealt with. Oh, I didn't bend the knee when the government said that the election was perfect or the most secure in our nation's history. Those kind of claims were laughable. We're a Orwellian world now. If the government speaks, you're just supposed to bend the knee and back down.
So have you been?
What lawyers are ethically obligated to do?
Well, I understand that, and you know, we all as lawyers we experience that in our careers. But what has happened? Hasn't that shocked you? You know, I read that you and your wife are getting death threats. There's attacks against you. People are considering you a criminal, a Satan. Like, how did it get from your legal arguments, which weren't always popular with the government or with other people, to this crazy extent of not only are we trying to get his license, but we're trying to get him and his family?
Well, it's called lawfare, and the head of the group called the 65 Project has made very clear what their aim is. Their aim is not just to disbar all the attorneys that worked on these election challenges, but to make them so toxic in their firms and communities that they will never, right-wing legal talent will never take up these kind of election challenges again. That's a deliberate effort to skew the adversarial process so that they have a free hand doing whatever they want in future elections, and everybody will be too afraid to stand up to it. It's a serious problem. Yeah, and so I happen to have the skill set and the tenacity to fight against this, and that's what we're doing.
And do you believe, John, that if you're successful, even on some level, that you are contributing to democracy and contributing to fairness throughout the country, not only with elections, but with investigations into things that may not look as kosher as they should be?
Yes, I do. Look, if we don't have free and fair elections, one of the cornerstones of our republic, the consent of the governed, goes out the window.
And what do you say to those people that say that, yes, that ideal, that goal, that objective is a wonderful objective, is a lofty objective, but you don't have the facts to back it up, and therefore your arguments are fallacious?
Well, you know, I would ask them to open their eyes and look at the facts. Look at Michael Gableman, former Supreme Court Justice of Wisconsin. Look at his investigative analysis that was done, where he identified several hundred thousand illegal ballots that affected the outcome of that election. Look at the terrific investigative work that's been done by Voter GA, a nonpartisan voter integrity outfit down in Georgia, about the election illegality and fraud that they have confirmed. So anybody that says there's no evidence and no facts to back up what I'm saying is deliberately or willfully blinding themselves to the evidence that's out there in order to push a narrative that the election was perfectly good. It was the most secure in history. As I said earlier, those things were laughably false at the time, and we have subsequently confirmed that they were laughably false. And people just don't want to acknowledge that what went on was really wonky. And, you know, and if it goes on again, I fear for our country, because people saw what happened in 2020, and they're not happy about it, and I don't think they're going to be willing to tolerate it happening again.
We may see that in the next election. It'll be interesting. I only have a couple minutes with you, John. I want to ask you quickly, you know, there has been this statement in the press that you're working for Marjorie Taylor Greene, for Matt Gaetz. Is that true? As a lawyer whose license is suspended right now on an appeal, are you continuing to work behind the scenes on both the representatives' cases?
I am doing the things that I am allowed to do, I represent Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz in their challenge to the unconstitutional shutdown of their political rally back in 2021. I'm representing Jaden Rodriguez in Colorado. He's the kid who was kicked out of school because he had a Gadsden flag patch on his backpack. And the teacher said, that's a symbol of slavery. And he said, no, ma'am, it's a symbol of freedom fighting against government tyranny. So these are the kind of things that I'm called upon as experts, and I will continue to do that to the extent that I am allowed.
All right. Well, we appreciate you taking the time today. I know you have a busy schedule. It's John Eastman. Watch for this appeal. Wishing you all the best. I truly believe that, you know, as a lawyer, you deserve the right to be a lawyer. Notwithstanding, people may not agree with your views, your perspectives, but your heart is in the right place, it sounds like. So wish you the best, and maybe you can come back on the show once this appeal goes through and you can tell us how you prevailed, if in fact you do.
Thank you very much, Alan, and I appreciate being on the program.
All right, take care. All right, well, we have just spoken with John Eastman, and you have to stay tuned. I want to hear from our law firm. I think we have a great ad right now that we want to play. So I can give me a chance to take a break now and come back with something you really don't want to miss. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on KBC Radio.
Have you or someone you know been injured on the job? Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn Lawyers understand that physical and emotional workplace injuries severely impact your life. You have rights when injured at work, but you need an advocate to avoid getting lost in the red tape of a broken system. Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn Lawyers fully understand the complex workers' compensation system and will protect your rights if you've been injured on the job. RGW Lawyers won't give up when the insurance company fails you, and they have years of experience with catastrophic injuries like brain injuries, strokes, chemical exposures, cancers, and death. RGW Lawyers are compassionate and aggressive with over 40 years of advocacy for the rights of injured workers and have helped people change their lives with some of the largest settlements in California. You need someone in your corner. If you're suffering from a work-related injury, Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn Lawyers will fight to get you the medical treatment you need. A workplace injury can happen at any time. Put this number in your phone now, 855-4-RGW-LAW, 855-4-RGW-LAW, or go to rgwlawfirm.com.
So this is my second show back on Gervie's Law and been gone a long time. I think a lot of people may wonder where I was and what happened. And unfortunately, it was not for good reasons. I wasn't competing at the Olympics or, you know, on Broadway. Nothing like that. I was actually caring for my mother, who became very ill, very sick. And that was in Toronto, and I went back to Toronto over an 8 or 9 month period, probably for about 6 months of that 9 months. And I sat by her side, I held her hand, I helped her through. We had some good times, some fun times, some joyous times, and a lot of ugly times. Ugly meaning that life was kicking me in the butt and her. And the pain that I was feeling when I was with my mom was because my mom was such an amazing person. She had been there by my side my whole life, and I was going to be by her side until the end. In fact, in the hospital at one point, one of the doctors came up to me and said, you're really an amazing son because your mom was with you when you were born, and you're with her when she is leaving the world. And I will tell you, all I could think about was what a wonderful person she was. She cared for me, cared for her whole family, cared about life. She was someone who had unconditional love and support. I've never seen that kind of unconditional support. She was on my show, Gervie's Law, this show, so many times. From the beginning, 10 years I've done this show, and my mom was there every step of the way. She never missed a show unless she couldn't figure out how to use Alexa, which happened toward the end, where she would call me and say, I can't get KBC. They're playing some kind of rap music when I said KBC. And as it turned out, I think it was KBC, which was a different station altogether. But she would listen and wait for my voice to come through the Alexa, until finally I told her it's KABC, so we need to make sure you listen to the show, not to some really bad swear words that I don't let my kids listen to. And she listened to every show. She was on so many shows and people loved her. She was on the Mother's Day show and she had such a funny sense of humor. We had one guest who were, I think, talking about some kind of strange sexual things, and I can't remember what they were. And I was so embarrassed. It was like when I went with my parents to the Howard Stern movie. I felt the same way when I sat there in the studio and my mom was in front of me because she was visiting from Toronto, and this woman was talking about some kind of edible things that I didn't really understand. I was so uncomfortable. But of course, my mom had a smile on her face and after the show said, I really liked her. She was really interesting. Because that's who my mom was, saw the best in everyone, including all the people here at KBC who she became friends with. And I've been trying to deal with, you know, the loss. I felt alone, even though I have family and friends who have been very supportive. And the way that I've dealt with it is pretty simple. I always think about the experiences that I had in my lifetime with my mom and our family had and our friends had together. I think about what a wonderful person she was, and it makes me realize it was a life so well lived. It was something that I will never, ever, ever forget how special our relationship was. And those are the memories, the specific stories that I can see her on her hands and knees when I was packing to go to Brown University away from Winnipeg, Canada, my home, for the first time. And she was putting so much food in that bag that I think she thought the food was going to stay for a year, that I would be well nourished just because she sat at 4 o'clock in the morning before my flight was leaving on her hands and knees, putting all my stuff together, always being there for me. This show is special to me because my mom shared it with me. Thank you for sharing the show with me today, and thank you for being with me on Gervie's Law. We'll see you next week.
This show is pre-recorded and furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.